We are trying.
Wear Warren's matches when we need them. We're not going to get that going. So we're here to celebrate Warren's life. What a wonderful, multifaceted person Warren was. A son, of course, a father, a husband, researcher, teacher, and friend, bicyclist, canoe paddler, cook, and of course other skills that we'll learn about today, and perhaps some of those skills that he didn't have. He was a polymath. He always kept a pack of 3x5 cards in his pocket. Does anybody need one to take notes today? He loved classical music. He especially was interested in classical musicians that were child prodigies. Schubert wrote this piece when he was 19. But he also seemed to know the lyrics to folk songs and pop music. He was, of course, a punster. He prepared and presented 63 different programs for Prairie, and those are listed in your program. He was a chemistry major as an undergraduate. Did you know that? He lost both Lois and Alita to cancer. And then, of course, he assisted Lois in her blindness and then needed assistance in his own blindness. His PhD from the University of California, Berkeley, was entitled The Social Control in Modern Science. It's really a history of science. He interviewed a large variety of scientists for that dissertation. And Warren was someone who always wanted to learn something new. As an adult, older adult, he took on the recorder, a drum, singing, computers, word perfect to the end. Took on talking books, but he was frustrated by the lack of scholarly works, especially those in the social sciences. And today, we're going to pause. We'll ponder for a while the significance of Warren's life and of his death, our grief and our joy. We'll hear some of Warren's favorite music, listen to words of eulogy from his family and friends, and then gather together for a potluck. We'll have to spend a little bit of time getting tables set up, but we'll be ready to share our stories of Warren, about his work, his humor, his family, and his world views. So let's sing. Warren is the musician. The words for the two things that we're going to ask you to sing are in your program. And since Warren was an undergraduate chemistry major, we figure he knew something about coffee. Coffee, of course, was his favorite drink, unless it was Merlot. So let's sing Coffee, Coffee, Coffee.
Thank you.
So Susan wants to talk about my father and music, and then Eric will talk about the sociology professor, Linda Sheehy walking with Warren, and then Rick Recking reading some of the messages received from Warren's students.
All right, well, I decided to base my memories on the reasons I chose the three songs. First of all, coffee. Every parent has a ritual that you get used to. And in terms of my father, it was the morning coffee and the newspaper. He would read the New York Times the most of the time. I think he could find it in practically every country he went to that sat around the place. And basically, even some of my earlier memories deal with him and getting coffee. I like the example of we used to go up regularly as kids to the Boundary Waters in Minnesota for a canoe trip. And it's made even more memorable for me by the one time, horror of horrors, the coffee was left behind. He managed to trooper on, but I think that was one time when he was actually glad to be back to civilization. The other time, as a teenager, you're brought up even more. You know, you think of Paris and the beautiful cafes. So we stay in me and my father at this bed and breakfast right by the Notre Dame Cathedral. Beautiful sights, everything else. So he decides to sneak off, not have the breakfast part of the bed and breakfast, and sneak off to a cafe and treat himself to the nice stereotypical coffee and newspaper outside at an outdoor cafe in Paris. And this is even made even more memorable for me because when we got back, the hostess was a little annoyed. And I found out, finally, that I actually got enough high school French to be able to understand what she was annoyed about. And if you've ever taken high school foreign languages and then gone to the country, you know they speak twice as fast as anything you learn and that sort of thing. But he kept this up all of his life. Well, he kept up the newspaper all of his life. Well, at one period, he was convinced to switch to tea, but he did go back to coffee at the end of his life. So the last few years, we really made it a point, particularly when I lost his sight, to have someone, my brother, myself, our helper Mary, to make sure that in the morning he had his cup of coffee and we read the newspaper to him. And so I have here, if anybody wants to read it, the last article read to him. It deals with the two women senators who helped vote down the Republican health care bill. It was read on the day he died. And I like to think he had helped him. Okay, so that was the first song chosen. The second song chosen is the Cat Duet, which we have a nice recording of, right? And that is memorable, but I think that was the time I sort of started realizing that he and his second wife were sort of getting together. They did this duet. I was fairly clueless, so the only time I finally realized it was he and Dolita came to me and sort of asked, permission whether they could court. An adult child is kind of weird, but also kind of nice in a way. And it netted me two other brothers and a nephew, so I came out the better. There we go. But it also came out, I mean, it was also this sort of period where he started sort of going more into music, as Al was saying, and learning all sorts of things. And I think Dolita helped him a lot. And as Karen was noticing, looking through the pictures, she took a picture of him reading the newspaper in practically every country he went to. So that's sort of the reason I chose that one. And so the third song, the Galaxy Song, which you may think is a bit on the weird side because it's a Monty Python song, well, done by a Monty Python member, is because he always enjoyed it. I don't know if you guys know Eric's girlfriend. Stand up. So one holiday, she came over for dinner. I think it was a Thanksgiving. And he really enjoyed these guys sitting down and singing the song to them. And it was just so sweet. So I basically chose these three songs because they're sort of a periods in his life that really fit him, I think, to a T. And let's just say the Galaxy song isn't particularly reverent. So it fits him fairly well. So, and I do have this article. If anybody wants to read it, they can look at it. So, all right, Eric, go ahead.
Okay, I was just gonna say a few things about my dad and being a sociology professor, and maybe my understanding of sociology or not understanding of it. But my father came here in 1962, and then he rode his bicycle. Every day to work, he commuted all winter long on his Schwinn Continental, and really, I was pretty satisfied with it. I thought that he needed a better bicycle, but he was satisfied with riding his Schwinn Continental. In the early 60s, he interviewed a bunch of kids in the university houses in Short Hills about a Santa Claus, like if they believed in him or what they believed in, and he wrote that, and it got published in American Sociological Review. And then someone in the New York Times saw it and picked it up. And then William Proxmire saw it, and he was giving out the Golden Fleece Award for expensive forays into academia. And my dad missed getting that because he didn't really spend any money, and the whole thing was a lark. So, and then, throughout my life, actually, other kids would wonder what a sociology professor was. It wasn't like a doctor or a lawyer. There didn't seem to be any purpose to it. And, they think, is it social studies? And then my dad didn't like social studies as a word. So, and then later on, my mom would invite friends to dinner. And my dad would interview them, actually, and some of them really liked it, because he was taking interest in the things they did, and some felt like they were kind of put on the spot, let's see, I got my 3x5 card. And he was very good at Scrabble, and he did the crossword puzzles every week with the New York Times, and he had all the little words, and he could win anybody in a game of Scrabble. And then he knew quite a bit about politics and the world, the changing world, and so we had one of our CNAs was Keba from Liberia, And my dad impressed her with his knowledge of their president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. And commented that they were way ahead of us in electing a woman president. So that's about it for memories. Yep.
Yeah, I knew Warren from Prairie since we both were Prairie members. But one of the other ways I knew him is that I was a sociology graduate student. So I knew him from the faculty, but I never took a course with him because it wasn't in my line of interest. And then for some reason that I cannot recall, we started taking a walk together every Saturday morning. And I would go over to his house and he would come out the door at 10 o'clock. He was always ready, and we'd take the nicest walk through Shorewood. We always had plenty to talk about. It was so pleasant, and it was so relaxing to be outside in a beautiful area with somebody that you enjoyed being with and taking a walk. And so that's how I mostly knew Warren. I don't think there's anything else I was going to say. It was short, but that's my little bit.
I'm so lucky it was all written for me. These are from the letters that Susan and Eric received. And thank you for the opportunity to read this. Dear Susan and Eric, I just learned of your father's death, and I wanted to extend my condolences. Your father was an important teacher to me throughout my time in graduate school. When I initially talked to him, I was finding my way into the sociology of science, and given the limited interest in the area at Wisconsin at the time, he did an independent study with me. Subsequently, he was on my orals and dissertation committees throughout. He offered thought-provoking questions, often leading me to approach problems in new ways. I always felt privileged to have had the opportunity to learn from your father. As we say in my religious tradition, may his memory be a blessing. It will surely be for me. And that was from Daniel Lee Kleinman, Associate Provost for Graduate Affairs at Boston University. And from his co-emeritus professor, Russ Middleton. I'm so sorry to hear of your father's death on Saturday. We know how it can be a long and difficult experience, for my wife, Beverly, died of Parkinson's disease last January. My condolences to you. Warren was one of my oldest friends, and I was a great admirer of him. He was an outstanding teacher, and I say so in a new book, The History of Sociology at UW-Madison, which is coming out next month. I used to tell graduate students that if I were a student, I would ask Warren to be my advisor. Time moves on. From the current Department of Sociology, Jim Ramo, Chair of Administrative Staff, I'm very sorry for your loss. Though we never had an opportunity to meet, I've heard from our colleagues about your father's many contributions to the department and the field of sociology. The news of Warren's passing has been shared with other faculty and staff. My condolences. And writing poignantly from Korea, a former student and friend, In Suk Kum, for the memory, she's so sweet and self-effacing, for the memory of Professor Warren O. Hagstrom. Warren was the most wonderful professor who taught his students with lots of knowledge in so many different areas, but also with delicate care and great patience. Thus, he led them to the love of truth and justice. He never imposed any of his thoughts and perspectives upon his students. I found in Warren the ideal of the greatest teacher as philosophers have defined. Memories come vividly to mind. He loved music and looked like a boy when he played the recorder at his house. And he seemed as a mother when he lovingly cooked dishes for us and was considerate of his own children. In 1999, he visited South Korea with his wife, Dolita. Instead of the typical tourist stops, they went to urban factories, farming villages, Buddhist temples, an elementary school, and a local university. They both had a merry time with the people who were working and studying. Warren gave them a fresh inspiration by trying to understand them deeply. I am sad for his absence and will remember them forever. Thank you all, one of his students, In Suk Kum.
We don't think this is the one where this song was sung. Can a secular humanist love cats? Is on the list. Another one with the religious significance of dogs. Are we fortunate or not that we don't seem to have any recording of Warren and Dolita singing this?
Well, actually, it was Dolita and Mechie Butler.
Dolita and Mechie, all right.
But, I mean, you can, guys can imagine.
So, we have microphones if anyone would like to make some comments. Joe, we've got a microphone here because we have hearing assisted devices.
Thank you. My name is Joe Elder. I was a colleague of Warren's for many years. I arrived in 1961, he arrived in 1962. We both moved into what was then a brand new building, the Social Science Building, which was on the border of Lake Mendota. Hard to find an office building with a more attractive setting. A couple of stories about Warren. From the moment we met, I think we liked each other. There's a lot of overlap. I taught theory. He sometimes taught theory. He was interested in the sociology of knowledge. And this is something in which I was interested. I will tell you two stories about Warren, because I'm sure there are many, many stories that people want to share. Warren was a bicyclist, a heroic bicyclist, a nutty bicyclist. There were days when Warren would arrive when the ice was so thick on the roads you thought nobody should be on anything other than sort of a tread of some kind. I do recall one day when he arrived looking like he'd been in a battle. He had fallen. He had torn his trousers. He was bleeding. I said, Warren, are you going to stop biking? He said, never. So that was part of the persistence which I made him absolutely charming. I was also a subject of one of those informal studies. He was curious about what happened when faculty or parents tried to teach their children a subject. And with many interesting relays, what can your kids learn, the complicated relationship between children and parents, and so on. And he was curious if I had ever tried to teach anything to my children. His thesis was that it was very, very difficult for parents to teach children because of all the complex intergenerational relations. It turned out the only thing I'd ever tried to teach my kids was music. I'm a modest pianist, and I taught all three of our children piano to get them started. I'm happy to say they've all continued to different levels. Of the four students whom I ever taught, two actually became professional musicians, which is a very high batting average for a moderate pianist. But he was curious about the relationship between myself and my oldest daughter, who is now a professional musician. And the fact, his thesis was, if you were teaching something to your kids that you were not identified as a very knowledgeable person, you were much more likely to be accepted than if you were teaching them something for which you had an international reputation. Not sure if that held, but anyway, sorry, charming to see Warren, the investigator, using me as one of his subjects. He was a delightful colleague. His room was about three doors down the corridor for nearly 40 or 50 years. The kind of person everybody should have the pleasure of having as a faculty colleague. Thanks very much.
Warren was my next door neighbor. I was the undergraduate advisor in sociology many years, and I always admired his filing system, which was a piling system. But he was great. You know, here was this great pile of stuff, and if you ask him for something, he... right on. Amazing.
It's genetic.
Well, I have a music, obviously, a music memory, and that is, you know, Warren did these music programs for years. Well, then Delita and I started the choir, and he came into the choir as a bass. He did improve over time, but he was so thrilled the first time we did a program that the choir sang, because it was the first time he'd actually been able to be a participant in one of his own music programs. Before that, he was always the speaker and was recruiting people to play, but he'd never actually performed. And then Dolita gave him then ultimately the courage and the help to be able to perform individually. But that was so, I can remember him being so pleased and so proud that he'd actually been part of the music.
Warren got into
Just hold it like this.
Warren got into music the way he got into German and music go together. And as long as Dolita lived, they, the two of them, were the most steady attendees at what we call chat room Deutsch, which is a twice a month German discussion group. And while Warren never really became very... and never really made it into German grammar, but his love of the more abstruse German philosophers and so forth was always so full of humor, and he just loved this. And we didn't care if he mixed up German and English. But I brought one thing that is so illustrative of German's, of Warren's English quote of Lord Chesterfield. And this was for an English meeting, and it was typical of Warren's kind of humor. As Lord Chesterfield once said to his son, avoid sex. The pleasure is brief, the cost is immense, and the posture is ridiculous. We all love it. We all hate it.
It's kind of hard to pick any one. Warren's second wife, Delita, was one of my very dearest friends. And Susan and I have, how many plays do you think we've gone to over the years?
Over 100.
We started, 30, 35 years ago. And every year, Gilbert and Sullivan, and dinner at a place of your choice. And I've shared Thanksgiving with them, and I've shared the Scrabble, and you're right, he wiped everybody off the map. And it was so easy for him to do that. He wasn't pondering, he just did it. Warren's, what can I call it? Warren's social manners were sometimes a little bit eccentric. I remember calling him once about a meeting. He was chair of a committee I belonged to, and I asked something about the time or the place, and he gave them to me and hung up. He didn't say anything else. And I was sitting there thinking, what did I do wrong? Did I offend him in some way? As I got to know him better, I realized that when it was done, and he stopped. It was that simple.
Well, as you can see from your bulletin, there are 63 services that Warren presented to our congregation, which I find amazing. And there are folders, which is wonderful, with his notes and outlines of those services. And Rosemary Dorney and I went down into the basement of their house and brought them back, and they will be in the Prairie Archives. And some of them also have been recorded so that you could get a cassette and listen to them. And also Warren, for 20 years, kept track of what was happening here at Prairie. He wrote down who the officers were. He wrote down who the lay ministers were that year and unusual events and so on. And one of my favorite times of watching Warren up here on the platform was when he played the part of the inquiring physicist, Sidney, for the one-act play, Sidney and God.
I know Warren primarily from Prairie and from being in their home when he and Delita were married. And I can remember always just feeling like it was a small house, but cozy, but such a home of the mind. I mean, you could just see people who were interested in thoughts and intellectual ideas and discussion and exchanges and games. You know, I'm trying to think, what is the game you play where you claymation? I think I played claymation at their house.
Yeah,
I think so. And charades. And just always thought, This is a great way to live your life.
When I first came to Prairie in 89 as the DRE, I learned was learning about the society and who was in it, and Warren was one of those key people over the years. He was just a solid Prairie person for me. Loved going canoeing with him on the annual Prairie canoe trips. That was always a special time, you know, away and in nature, and it was good to hear about the family's canoe trips too, and then bringing his intellectual capacity to share with Prairie. Help me out. Didn't he do a service on the Satanic Verses by Salman Rushdie?
Yeah.
And that was such a revelation to me. I had never read the book. I didn't know it was humorous. That. And Warren revealed that. It was a really good gift. So I appreciated that from him, too.
So
So I was co-teaching a Prairie religious education class with Warren the year that he got married to Dolita. I can't remember that year, but we were downstairs teaching, and he said to me, I'm going to have to... I'm going to have to leave class early because I have to go upstairs. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, because I'm getting married.
He and did it I said, during announcements.
Don't tell anybody, he said, but that's why I have to leave class early. And I said, okay, I'm not going to miss this. So I brought the kids upstairs, and we stood in the back, and I remember his announcement. He said, I want to announce that Dolita and I are getting married. And there was an uproar and clapping, and everybody's happy. And then he said, and you're all invited. And then he said, and I remember this because exact quote, because I thought it was just so him. You're going to have to step lively to avoid it because we're doing it right now.
Well, as a sequel to that, Bob Rushlein, I grew up here and moved to Eugene, Oregon for 19 years from 73 to 94. Well, 93, I guess it would. On May 3rd, 1993, I arrived back here. I'd come home every one or two years, so I knew something about two different Unitarian societies. I joined the Unitarian Society in Eugene in 1986. So here, a few years later, I had a choice between First Society and Prairie. And I kind of liked the informality of Prairie. And Eileen had actually invited me to speak one time during a visit in 1986. And when I got here, it was May 8th, 1993, to get it straight. My first service was a surprise wedding of Dolita and Warren. And that sealed the deal. That this group was that free and loose to really go for it in life and make the most of Sunday morning. I really appreciated many contributions from both of them, commenting on services and giving their insights over the years. But that freewheeling of a group, that really sealed the deal.
So, my name's Karen, and I'm Eric's friend. And he invited me to meet his folks in 2009. So I got to meet Warren for the first time then, and he cooked dinner. And then after dinner, we went into the living room and played Fictionary. And he trounced us because I believe he knew every single word in the dictionary. When he got out of the hospital at the beginning of June this last spring, I was fortunate enough to spend a few Saturday evenings with him. And we listened to albums. He introduced me to leader music with the poetry set to classical music. And it was a piano accompanying a vocalist. And these songs were very emotional and strong. And he said that for a treat, he would buy one of these albums and then come home and listen to it on a Saturday evening. He also asked to listen to Miles Davis, to the Cafe Cantata by J.S. Bach, because not all classical music is religious. During these few evenings I got to have with him, I was asking him about what pieces of music or poetry or readings we could contemplate while we were thinking of him at his memorial service. And he said, I'll get back to that, to you on that. So finally, I was getting more anxious to try and unearth something. And I said, Warren, what should we think about when we're remembering you? And he didn't answer. And I said, well, the Lord's Prayer? And he's like, John Maynard Keynes. So, since we don't have so much time to contemplate his theories on macroeconomics and economic principles and government, I thought we could just settle for a quote. The political problem of mankind is to combine three things: economic efficiency, social justice, and individual liberty. Another quote that I came across was also, people will do the rational thing, but only after exploring all other alternatives.
I just wanted to comment on how both generous and creative he was, which I got to witness as a parent when we were in the secret friends or mystery friends exchange of letters that goes on in this society year after year. And I had the good fortune of being a parent to someone that he was the secret friend of and got to read those amazing letters. And he spent, there was one letter that I will never forget. He spent all of this time creating an entire little science fiction story for my son about people who lived on big mushroom-like islands and they had to fish for food over the side and, I mean, just, and drawings and all of this stuff. He had clearly spent so much time for, just to communicate with this, you know, 8-year-old. And I was just so struck by his willingness to just give of himself.
Well, thank you for your comments. Oh, there are more? Yes.
Hello. So, I just wanted to share the last memories I had with Warren. Well, I call him Gumpair all the time. So it was we were all gathered in a room at his house, Eric, Susan, Karen, and my two dads, and we were doing this algebra problem together, and yeah, for math, and he was just sitting with us, having guacamole and drinking his wine and everything, and I just want to share this moment because it was, I just felt like he was cooperating so well and like so alive when I was there, and I felt like he was saving that last moment, like to spend time with me. And I just love that. Plus, before he died, I wasn't there. Karen told me that she asked him, is there anything you want to tell Ami before you die? And he said, well, just to make sure he does well in the soccer games. And I was surprised that. And then she asked, is there anything else besides that? And he just said, only just in the soccer games. So whenever I'll be playing in on the pitch, and I'll be thinking of him, and he'll be with me. And also, many of you guys said you love biking. Well, me and my dad, Papa Paul, I call him, we always bike, so I'll have that as memory of when I bike with him.
Ami, before you go, would you mind, I heard the story about what you're going to be doing next. Would you mind telling us?
Well, over the summer, since I wanted to play in Europe, I didn't want to play in the United States. Because my dream was to just play in Europe and make it big, be the best football player I could be. So I decided to look up this program called ISM Academy, and I told my dads about it, and they said, are you sure this is, you know, rigged or anything? Or, you know. It's like, well, I'm sure it'll be good, and it'll be an opportunity to reach my dream. So they let me do it, signed me up for it, and then I tried out. But apparently I made it, and I got scouted by two clubs, and I'll be moving to Italy in a few weeks. Yeah, I'll be living at an Assisi, at a boarding school there, learning Italian, so I'll be very excited. Yeah, but, yeah, so, yeah, he'll always be with me. You know.
Thanks, Emma.
Hi, I'm Stephen, and I'm Warren's son-in-law. And I wasn't going to say anything today because I just thought, well, I just want to sit here and enjoy all the wonderful things that are being said about him. but I thought I would share a couple of stories. One includes Warren and Alita, and then the other one just includes Warren. But before that, I want to thank Eric and Susan for allowing me to be part of their family for the last 23 years, and for being great brothers and sisters. And I look forward to many, many more years of us being together. So, I come from a very just modest family in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And neither one of my parents were very educated. I mean, they were smart in their way, but they weren't college educated. My father was a fireman, and my mother was a homemaker. So they knew a lot about certain things, but obviously not really book smart. So I meet Paul, and I come to Madison, and I meet this family that is like overly educated. I mean, intimidatingly educated. And I walk into their house, and there's no TV. And there are no People magazines on any stand. And I thought, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Because I'm not qualified to be here. So, like you said, they were always reading the New York Times. And Warren would always ask, do you want to read part of the New York Times? And I thought, no, because I don't even understand what's going on. And don't you have, like, a People magazine I can read? But they always, like you said, obviously Scrabble seems to be the theme here today, and they always like playing Scrabble. And so for about the first 20 years of Paul and I being together, well, they would have like 7,000 points and I would have like 30 points. And one day I just said, I just can't do this anymore, because maybe if we did it in Spanish, then I would have an advantage. Then I would might have 7,000 points and they'd have 30 points. But so one day I just had had enough, and I said, I was being grumpy, and I said, that's it, I'm not playing anymore. It's not fair, and I get words like cat, and they use all of their letters. And then I would say, that's not even a word. And then I would look it up, and it was a word. So I was pouting, and Warren Delay said, are you sure you don't want to play? And I said, no, I'm just going to sit this one out. I'm just going to sit over here and guess fret. And they were so sweet, and both of them went to the bookstore the next day, and they bought me a book of Scrabble words. And they brought it to me, and I thought, oh my God, this is very nice and sweet, but you have to know what word you're looking for before you can look in the Scrabble dictionary to find it, or you will be there all day. But it was a thought that counts. As far as Warren is concerned, the very first time I met Warren, it was Mardi Gras had just finished in New Orleans, and Warren and Delita had gone to a Mardi Gras party here in Madison, and they still had all the feathers and the face paints and what have you. And I came over to their house, and I met him, and he said to me, so you're my new son-in-law? And I said, I am. He said, can I paint your face? And I thought, oh my God, I don't even know, early meeting this guy, and he wants to paint my face. What does this like involve? So I said, sure. I mean, I didn't want to be rude. So I sat down, and he painted my entire face. And I put feathers in my hair. And it was the best time I ever had in my entire life. And we had so much fun, and we just laughed and joked. And Warren was the most amazing father-in-law. And I'm really going to miss him and Delita very much. So thank you for allowing me to be part of your family.
Susan recommended the Galaxy song, and I didn't know it. Which is a real mistake in life. Also, I hadn't seen the movie The Meaning of Life, and so I did watch it, and it's hilarious. And if anyone would like to watch it, let me know, and we'll schedule a time to honor Warren with a glass of Merlot and watch the Monty Python's The Meaning of Life. This is not the easiest song in the world to sing, so we requested some help. Eileen will give us the melody on the piano to start with, and then we have five other musicians that are here, three of them with ukuleles, because that appears to be the appropriate instrument to honor Warren with in singing this song. And so Anne will give us, are you going to do the words at the
beginning? Yeah.
Okay. Anne will give us some introductory words, and then we'll do the non-traditional way of moving immediately into the verse with having Eileen give you the melody. And then we'll sing the verse, and Anne will get you started as to when you come in on the verses.
You're not going to come up? Okay, that's fine. All right. Okay. So here's how it starts. Come on up, Nadine. Come on. We need your voice. Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious, or daft, and you feel like you've had quite enough.
The words are on the back of the insert.
Yes. So in the middle of the insert here. So. Yeah, on the back.
And we're going to...
Yes.
You're going to give them
melody
first.
Melody, you will recognize it, and then they
then
will
we'll
help you
go.
So just
I'll cue you in.
Just wait.
So I get to add a few personal comments about Warren. Think about A Prairie Home Companion and reference to the Norwegian shy persons. Warren always appeared to me when I first met him, that he was one of the shyest people in the world. But once you got to know him, it was a lot different. I looked up Warren's name, the Olaf, but always Warren Hagstrom. I looked him up on the web and found some interesting things about him. His book, The Scientific Community, published in 1960 or so, with interviews based upon his dissertation. References to articles, Competition in Science in the American Sociological Review, Inputs and Outputs on the Prestige of University Science Departments in the Sociology of Education Journal, and a reference that I think is important. The quotation is, "The importance of scientists' interaction with colleagues is not clear. Einstein claimed he was isolated as a young man. Hagstrom, summarizing various studies, claims that scientists' isolation is apt to lead to low productivity." And so Warren did not isolate himself in the scientific community and these interviews. And one of the wonderful experiences that I had was going to lunch fairly regularly with Warren. And those lunches then evolved into regular lunches with Bob Durkin. And Bob was a participant, a member of Prairie for a while. And we'd go to lunch and learn about socialism in Wisconsin. And Warren was right in there in his knowledge of socialism.
Al?
Yeah.
Was Bob Durkin a firefighter?
No. Bob Durkin was Milwaukee. He was a labor leader in the Milwaukee area, became Governor Doyle appointed him as administrator of the Division of Health because he had been involved so much in issues of insurance and health care provision in his work in Milwaukee, and was a really neat person. Shirley Grindrod became his wife when she'd been widowed. So a couple of final words. We remember, of course, we honor Warren. We also mourn Warren. We celebrate his life. I think maybe Warren might have, given his interest in labor movements, used Joe Hill's quote, "Don't mourn, organize." And then some final words from Neil deGrasse Tyson. "We're part of this universe. We are in this universe, but perhaps more important than both those facts is that the universe is in us. No one is dumb who is curious. The people who don't ask questions remain clueless throughout their lives. Those who see the cosmic perspective as a depressing outlook, they really need to reassess how they think about the world. Because when I look at the universe, I know it's that I'm small, but I'm also big. I'm big because I'm connected to the universe, and the universe is connected to me." So we'll rearrange some chairs, bring out some tables. If you can help, please do that. If you can't, please move to the sides of the room so that we don't run over you. And we will continue these stories over some lunch and coffee.